you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Mark Striegel,
John Astronomy,
the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the podcast. This is Mark Striegel, along with the co-founder, the co-host of Talking Metal, back in the fold with us today, John Astronomy. How are you, dude?
I'm doing great, Mark. Rock and roll forever. I can't believe that we're rocking out in 2019.
Yeah, I know you've been playing a lot of gigs with your band, like it. You've been out in the road with Ace Frehley, and you're going to be out in California doing the tour with them out there. But correct. You're also doing something with me real cool back here in the greatest city in the world, as Nikki Sixx says.
Correct.
New York City, and it is a really cool night at the Iridium, the famous club that Les Paul made famous. And it is two of our favorite rockers, Corey Glover from Living Color, the Grammy Award-winning hard rocking artist that we love. What a voice on that guy. And the amazing guitar player, Mike Orlando. So they're teaming up together to do this very special kind of one-off concert with the two of them playing some music that they've been working on together, and also some hits from bands like Adrenaline Mob and of course, Living Color. So it's going to be just a great night on September 9th at the Iridium. John, what do you think of this? The first five people who come up to us and say, let's do a Talking Metal toast, we'll buy him a beer.
Guaranteed it. And guess what? My birthday, a big milestone birthday, and I'll leave it to that.
Right.
Is the next day, 3 right? days later.
Oh, three days later. Right.
3 days later. Yeah. So we will absolutely buy the first three or four people a drink. And we're going to have a great time, and we invite all of the Talking Metal listeners who are hearing this to come hang out with Talking Metal at the Iridium, legendary venue, and to see two legendary great guys.
Yeah, Mike Orlando and Corey Glover of Living Color, September 9th at 8:30, and things do start on time at the Iridium, so get there a little early. You can eat a meal there, great food,
Good food. Great club.
Right in the heart of Times Square, New York City, September 9th, Mike Orlando featuring Corey Glover from Living Color. And of course, Mike Orlando we know from Adrenaline Mob and Sonic Stomp, and among other things. So let's do this. We got some great guests today. Corey Glover is here on the podcast to talk about what he's up to with Mike Orlando and talk about his amazing history. Then we have Brent Muscat. You know Brent, right?
I love Brent, and I last saw Brent when I was in Las Vegas, and Ace Frehley was doing the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, and people were making fun of me because of my creepers, and guess what? When Brent Muscat came out with the creepers, I said, shut up, because he has them, and that means they're cool. So guess what? Creepers are cool, Brent Muscat is cool, and he saved me for the people who were making fun of my shoes.
Wow, I never heard that story. All right.
That's a good story.
One. Yeah. Brent,
because he has creepers, and he will know what I'm talking about.
Cool. Well, Brent Muscat has been a part of so many legendary Faster Pussycat albums. He's going to talk about that with us today. And then to wrap things up, we have Freddie from Weapons of Anu. He'll close out today's episode.
Awesome, Mark. Awesome.
All right, cool. Well, without further ado, let's get right into the interview with the man who will be playing the Iridium on September 9th in New York City with our friend Mike Orlando. Here is Grammy Award-winning artist Corey Glover here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal podcast, and what an honor for the first time ever on Talking Metal, the great vocalist known mostly for his work with Living Color, Corey Glover. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. And man, you've been busy. The last 2 years, we've seen a brand new album by Living Color, which I loved, Shade. Right. There was also the Ultraphonics album that you put out with George Lynch called Original Human Music. And now we're getting word there's another album. I believe it's a full album on the way with you and Mike Orlando. Is it going to be a full album that you guys are working on?
I would hope so. We've been working on it in drips and drabs. So we're trying to see what it sounds, see what it turns out to be, and trying to figure out what a band looks like with he and I in it.
Very cool. And where did you first meet Mike?
I actually first met Mike on the Shiprock cruise.
Oh, okay.
And I saw him play and I was just blown away. I thought he was the most amazing. You know, I have a very high threshold for guitar players. So he was very, very, very impressive.
Cool. And were you were on the cruise with Living Color, or Living Color? Cool.
No, when I went out, I was a stowaway on Shiprock at that time.
Oh, okay, cool. So do we have word when we might hear the release of this music? Do we know that yet?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay.
I would probably put out some singles at some point and see how that works out and then go from there.
Very cool. And I'm also totally excited because on September 9th, right around the corner, you guys are doing what I believe is your first show together ever at the Iridium, which is just a great, really high-end club right in the middle of Times Square. Great place, made famous by Les Paul. And I'm really looking forward to this show. Can you talk a little bit about what the fans might expect at the Mike Orlando, Corey Glover gig at the Iridium on September 9th?
Well, more than likely it'll be, you know, a mixture of our catalogs, I'm sure, and some, you know, with a few surprises thrown in just for good measure.
Very cool. And again, that show is September 9th at the Iridium in New York City. I will be there, and it's a great, great venue to see performances in because Les Paul, he designed the sound system, so it's obviously great, and it's a real intimate venue. So really looking forward to that show.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, cool. Hey, Corey, I wanted to just kind of go back in time because I've been a fan of yours for a long time and wanted to first go back to the very early days of Living Color. One thing we've read through the years quite a bit is that Mick Jagger was possibly the guy who discovered you guys. Can you talk a little bit about if you believe that's true? Did he really discover you guys? And what was his involvement with Living Color back in the early days?
Well, we had developed a scene in the mid-80s and trying to sort of establish ourselves within the scene here in New York City. And we are playing around town, most notably at CBGB's, and garnered a reputation for being a really good band. And at one point, from the suggestion of Doug Wimbish, who is now currently our bass player, that when Jagger was making a solo record and was looking for a band to tour with, that Vernon would be a good sort of, Vernon Reed, obviously the guitar player, would be a good sort of addition to the mix. So Doug had talked up about us, and a few other people had made mention of us in as a band to look out for. And Jagger having his ear to the ground, invited Vernon over to audition for him. And in the midst of him auditioning, he kept asking about Living Color. And as a sort of throwaway, we said to him, look, we're playing at CBGB's next Thursday. You want to come down? And he did with Jeff Beck.
Wow, I didn't know the Jeff Beck thing. That's amazing.
Yeah. So he and Jeff Beck were at the gig, and they were, I guess they were impressed. And Jagger said to us that if there's anything he could do to help us get a record deal, please feel free. And it turned out that he was still doing, he was mixing his record, his solo record, Primitive Cool, here in New York City. And he had rented out the whole studio. And he's like, well, on my off time, why don't you guys come to the studio and we'll record some stuff for a demo and see how that works. Long story short, the demo got us a record deal. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Now, Glamour Boys, did he produce that track on Vivid?
He did. He produced Glamour Boys. He produced Which Way to America.
Okay.
He played harmonica on the song Broken Hearts.
Right, that's right.
He was very integral in helping us out. And obviously in 1989, we were tagged to be the opening act for the Stones on the Steel Wheels tour, which really sort of helped us along as well.
Right on. And yeah, what a big stage for you guys to be on at that point in your career.
Well, you know, at that point, the record had just come out maybe a year ago, and then we were on the road, and you could fit all the places we played across the country and across North America in one stadium that we played with.
Wow.
With the Stones. Like, we played in RFK Stadium in Philadelphia. It was the first show, and it was overwhelming. It was really, really overwhelming. And playing in places, like playing in Shea Stadium when Shea Stadium was still around, obviously.
Right.
And playing in those kind of venues and just being completely blown away by it all, and completely blown away by the generosity of the whole Stones organization. Not just Mick was really good to us. You know, everybody in the band was really nice to us, and we were welcomed really, really nicely. They're really nice folks.
Right on. Well, I saw you before then. It was at Trenton State College in New Jersey.
Wow.
And I'm guessing it had to have been 1988, I'm thinking. And it was with you guys and Fishbone. And that was a show. And I'm not just saying that this to kiss your ass because I'm talking to you. That show truly changed me. And, you know, I was kind of more in the box, a lot of 80s metal and stuff like that. And that show was like this mind opening experience for me, because, you know, a lot of people point to, oh, when Teen Spirit hit MTV and stuff. But no, for me, it was earlier than that. It was like in that time frame when I saw Living Color and Fishbone, and I heard Jane's Addiction for the first time, and Faith No More, and maybe even early Alice in Chains. You know, you guys really, in my view, you were bridging this gap to, you know, from the 80s to something new that was coming. Did you recognize that at the time, that, hey, we're on a new wave here?
I think so. I think, you know, the idea that music had to be sort of stratified and put into a box was really being challenged at that particular point in time. I think the whole idea, whole notion of rock radio was really sort of calcified at that particular point in time. Like, you could only, if you tuned to one station on the dial, you were certainly going to hear only one particular kind of music made by a particular kind of person. And I think bands like us and Fishbone and Faith No More, as you said, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Jane's Addiction, and really sort of challenge that notion that what you hear isn't necessarily what you hear on the radio isn't necessarily how you listen to music.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I guess, a number of years later that you guys ended up on what has just become a legendary tour and concert, Lollapalooza, the first Lollapalooza, 1991. I mean, what a lineup, and what really, again, just this historic kind of, it was a real changing of the guards. Jane's Addiction, Butthole Surfers, Body Count, Nine Inch Nails, Susie and the Banshees, Living Color. What do you remember from that tour?
It was wild. It was really, really wild. And it was like the door had opened for what I affectionately call the freaks. We were allowed to stand in the daylight, and we were allowed to really sort of shine and play how we wanted to, where we wanted to. This is when the underground became above ground, I think.
Right. You know, and kind of to circle back to what I was saying earlier, you know, there's this history always points to, oh, well, it was when MTV started playing Teen Spirit. But again, there was such a big buildup to that I always hate when people say that, because there was so much going on before then.
Well, you know, MTV at that particular point in time was basically a rock radio station.
Right.
So it sort of played to what the market was doing at the time. And what they were doing was they're playing album-oriented rock music. So real sort of stalwart, you know, folks like Aerosmith, were playing on there. I mean, to that regard, they didn't really play a lot of R&B music. They didn't play a lot of urban music at all, because they counted themselves as a rock station where you can see rock music videos. And I think, you know, love him or hate him, Michael Jackson sort of opened the door for different types of music to be played on MTV.
Definitely.
As a matter of fact, Michael Jackson actually aided in our career in terms of what you saw on MTV, because, you know, he really, there was a point when he was like, I'm not going to put any of my videos on unless you play some of these other artists.
Wow.
And so we have to, for that reason, sort of give it up to Michael Jackson and his organization for helping us out as well.
Did you ever meet Michael Jackson? Because I've heard stories about him that he actually liked like some of the harder rock music. Obviously, he was, you know, had his ear to the ground with guitar players like Van Halen and Steve Stevens. And I've heard that he was a Kiss fan. I don't know if that's true. Did you ever meet him?
I never met him. Vernon met him once or twice, but I've never met him.
Right. Right on. Right on. Cool. So what's...
Because he's looking for guitar players and, you know... Brian is a guitar player of some prominence, so he sought Vernon out.
Wow, cool. Was he thinking of doing some work with Vernon?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Cool. So Living Color, you guys had a great new album out a little under 2 years ago, Shade.
Yeah.
What's going on with Living Color right now? Do you have plans for later this year or 2020?
Well, we've been on the road since the spring. We went to South America. We went to Europe this summer. We're doing a few spot dates here and there across the country and playing it by ear at this point. We're actually considering going back into the studio and start working on some new stuff.
Oh, wow.
So we'll see how that works out.
Very cool. Well, keep us posted, definitely. And again,
absolutely.
We are completely psyched to see you and Mike Orlando. Yeah. Rock out September 9th at 8:30 sharp, guys. A great after work show at the Iridium in New York City. And we are also anxiously looking forward to the music you are creating with Mike Orlando. Can you talk a little bit about stylistically what you're looking at with the direction of the music you're working on with Mike? Because obviously both you guys are pretty diverse guys. What type of music can we expect from you and Mike?
I think, you know, what you can expect from me at least is to really sort of mix genres and try to stretch the boundaries of how you can stay within a certain space. In this case, it's you know, rock metal and heavy guitar sort of stuff, and give it some, you know, give it some soul, give it some funk. And that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, it's been wonderful. It's been amazing. I mean, like I said, Mike is one of the most amazing guitar players I've ever met in my life. An amazing just player, and just it's incredible what he can do.
Yeah, I agree. He is just absolutely great. From Adrenaline Mob to Sonic Stomp, there's so much great stuff that comes out of Mike and you too. So I think this is the perfect combo. I'm really looking forward to seeing this live gig take place on September 9th. And do you have a band in place to back you guys up, or are you still getting that together?
We're still trying to get that together, but I have no doubt that the music will carry the day.
Absolutely. Cool. All right, Corey. Well, I look forward to rocking out with you on September 9th at the Iridium, and always looking forward to what you're up to musically. And yeah, thanks for all the great music through the years.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
We're living like a programmed, like TV.
Majority's racist against the minority races. For the problems to be resolved in the race, it's gonna take more than a march and watch it to state around Sharpton's debates. Cops always harass the brothers. They like Clorox bleach, good for whites, bad for color. So when they ask the searchers, I get nervous, cause Mike Brown was shot down by the people hired to protect the service. Went from enlightenment to a dark zone. Millions of dumb people walking around with a smartphone. Everybody dressing the same as y'all clones, like we wearing a uniform. Being unique as rare as a unicorn. Refuse to do the norm and just accept yourself. Stop trying to be like everybody else, except yourself. You free your mind, you do anything that you wish to. Ignorance is bliss, I refuse to be blissful, man.
Program off the recent Living Color record called Shade right here on Talking Metal.
Absolutely. And we are going to get into our interview with Brent Muscat in just a bit. But I did want to take a minute right now to do a little announcement for you guys. Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. You can get in a crash. People can get hurt or killed. Here are some surprising stats. Almost 29 people in the United States die every day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though driving drunk fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives each year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet, too. You could get arrested. And man, that's going to mean huge legal expenses, hiring a lawyer and all that stuff. Just bad news. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent your drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. A sober driver, call a taxi, whatever, man. And if someone you know has been drinking, take the keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of drunk driving, but one thing's for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over.
And I'm going to get personal right now and tell all of the listeners that somebody that has been an important person in my life, I met her in kindergarten and she was my prom date, was the victim of a drunk driver.
Oh,
and
God.
Guys, call a car and get home safely.
Well,
correct.
Yeah, that I don't, you know, that says it. I'm speechless, John. I don't know what to say. But and you've told me that story, and I am sorry for that loss.
It's so, okay. It's all right. No problem.
Yeah, but you know, thanks, we do like to drink, and you know, it's like I said,
correct.
Talking metal
that
toast. And
we're
not
like
saying, we're not saying don't drink. We're just saying stop yourself.
Don't do
from
those things.
Drunk.
Yeah, rock out all you want. But don't do it and then get behind the wheel and then screw it up for everybody else. Not only you behind the wheel, but the other people on the road.
Guys, whatever you do, do not drive drunk. Be smart. All right. So on that note, John, you've been playing so many shows, man. I mean, it's insane. Congratulations. I mean,
thank you.
You
thank
are
you,
holding
Mike.
Down a full-time job. You're helping out here and there with Talking Metal, and you're out there literally touring. I mean, you guys were in Pennsylvania, where? Connecticut, Rhode Island.
Yeah. We were up in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts,
were in Long
right.
Island. We were in Cleveland, Ohio, at the House of FN Blues, great place, and Pittsburgh, PA, my hometown, Greensburg, PA, actually, and we have been having a blast rocking it out with Ace Frehley, and thank you to Ace Frehley for allowing Like It to rock out and open for you guys. We're actually missing a couple of dates. Ace is doing, he did last night in Atlanta, and he's doing tomorrow in Lexington, Kentucky. I've sat out those days just because we are so fried, but then we will pick up with Ace in Maryland next month, and then we're going to go from Annapolis, Maryland to East Hanover, New Jersey, free show. Check acereally.com for details.
Yeah.
And then we were doing Poughkeepsie, New York, Homer, New York. And then after that, Like It is going to Deface, California.
Nice.
With Jamie Ross. And we're going to do some shows out there. So guess what? California never saw this coming. We hope it's the same after that. We might have to get some politicians involved because you never know what's going to happen after Jamie Ross leaves California. It could be a national incident or international incident. You never know.
Right on. Right on. Like It. Featuring John Astronomy, Jamie Ross, Mike Lincoln, and Dave Messenger. Great band, guys. Definitely check it out. Real quick, is there a social media presence for you guys? Where's the best place? Website, anything?
Here's the thing. We're not that great yet on social media, but we do have a Facebook page, and I think you have to search it as Like It Band.
Okay.
The problem
we'll
is
we'll link it through the show notes on TalkingMetal.com.
We'll try to link it. And let me tell you this. There's like a I had like a really good thing to say and I forgot it in the last 30 seconds. I am so stupid, by the way. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, My phone's, guess what? This is Ace Frehley's bodyguard, all right. Jim Crowley, calling me. But I'm
You want to grab we'll get into the Brent interview?
Let's get into the Brent interview. I'll grab the call, and then we'll come right back out of it.
Okay, guys, we're going to get into the interview with Brent Muscat. But before we do that, let's hear Where There's a Whip, There's a Way by Faster Pussycat.
We'll be right back. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and calling in a guy I've been a longtime fan of, Brent Muscat. How are you, Brent? Great to talk with you.
Good, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm glad we finally got you on as a guest, and I want to talk about your past, your history, but let's start with what's going on now. You got the Saints of Las Vegas is your current band, and you guys, what, you play the Excalibur and other places?
Yeah, we play all over Las Vegas, a lot of casinos and on the Strip.
And is it originals, covers, or both?
We do a little bit of both.
Cool. So you would get
a lot of covers, though.
A lot of covers, right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And there's new music, too. You guys do, I heard a track on CD Baby that sounded great.
Yeah. We have some new music we put out. And we did House of Pain, my old band song. Going to be released on that the next day or two.
Oh, so you've re-recorded House of Pain?
Uh-huh, yeah, I'm sang on it.
Oh, very cool. And that's that's not out yet.
That's not out yet. It's coming. It should be out soon, yeah, within a day or two.
Wow, well, that's amazing, because I guess we'll start there, because it's really the 30th anniversary of Wake Me When It's Over. And any, besides releasing House of Pain, a new version of that, do you have any plans to celebrate the 30-year anniversary of Wake Me When It's Over?
Well, Tammy, the singer still tours with the band, so you could probably catch him out playing. But for me, just re-releasing House of Pain, that would probably be, my tribute to it.
Right on. And is that a song you play live with the Saints of Las Vegas?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I sing that sometimes live. And I do a couple other songs from the old band, like Bathroom Wall. And, do one or two songs from my old band. And we do some new tunes, some new originals, and, of course, covers of bands we like and stuff.
Cool. And is it strictly, like, a Las Vegas thing, or do you get out of Nevada and play other places with the Saints of Las Vegas?
Once in a while we get out, we've been to Arizona before and California, so we'll get out, but not too far yet, kind of around the West Coast area.
Right on. Cool. Well, to circle back around to an album that we all love, Wake Me When It's Over, again, 30 years has gone by. What are some of your memories of doing that second Faster Pussycat record?
Touring with, like, Motley Crue and David Lee Roth, and a lot of the tours we did some pretty big tours. Kiss.
Right on.
And Motley Crue was pretty memorable. We toured with them on Dr. Feelgood.
Absolutely. And that was such a big record. I mean, the video for House of Pain just exploded all over MTV. And
yeah.
What was that like?
It got to be a number one video on MTV.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember.
That was cool.
Nonstop, it was getting played on MTV. How did your life change at that point? Because you really went from being not that well known to basically Faster Pussycat was pretty much a household name at that point.
Like I said, when we first went out on tour, we went out as like a popular local band, but we came back as like rock star. So pretty amazing to have everybody, when we came back, people recognize you and get in free places and, get kind of spoiled,
Absolutely.
Pretty amazing.
Cool. And I was recently rewatching The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, which has really become a historical time capsule for the whole Sunset Strip and the music that was going on at that time. How do you view that movie when you see yourself in it all these years later?
It's funny. I mean, it's a lot of the bands in there that said they were going to make it that didn't,
Right.
It's interesting, to watch that, now looking back, and I think out of all the bands, we came off pretty good, so I'm pretty happy to watch it,
And the Sunset Strip scene in general, you were born and raised in that area, in Hollywood. Is that correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Monrovia, about just a half an hour outside of Hollywood. So not too far.
So as well as being a part of that scene, I mean, you saw it evolve. You saw it take shape and rise to its height and also kind of crumble afterwards. Can you talk a little bit about the early days of the scene and when, at what point you knew, wow, this is something crazy. There's something really going on here.
Well, I mean, we were part of the early part of that, you know, us and Guns N' Roses and Poison. And there was definitely something there, you know, definitely that atmosphere when you went out to clubs, the bands and the people were out on the street and promoting and, you know, handing out flyers, and people would go down to Hollywood and go to the Sunset Strip, and people would just walk the strip. There was a strip of clubs there, you know, like you had the Whiskey and the Roxy and the, and gosh, what was the other one? It was called the Central when we started, but it changed names a few times. Johnny Depp owned it. Central.
Then Viper,
it was the
Viper Room? Yeah.
Viper Room. But you had a strip of clubs there, so people would walk up and down the strip and just hang out. I mean, you should see the strip itself was like a gigantic club, you know?
Right.
It was definitely a scene happening at that time. And it was, you know, it was really great. And then, you know, the thing that ended it basically when Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden came out, that kind of ended the whole LA scene, you know, the whole Seattle thing took off, you know?
But was even before that, was there a point that the scene where you kind of felt like, all right, there's just too many kids moving here and coming in from the Midwest on buses, and it's just too much? Was there ever a point for you, because you, this was your town, that you had to kind of take a step back and think, maybe this is going the wrong direction? Or did you never have?
Well, we got lucky because we got signed and we got the tour. So we were out. We weren't in Hollywood too. Yeah, I mean, we were touring most of the year. We were touring. And then when we get back, we take a break, you know what I mean? So we got signed pretty early in the scene. So, you know, like I said, we were really touring most of the time, you know?
Right.
We'd come back, we'd go to the Cat House or something. You know, we had a club called the Cat House. And we'd go, you know, we'd come back and go out to the club and stuff and play a little bit, you know, like a big homecoming show or something. But we got real lucky. Like I said, we got signed pretty early on in the scene. So,
right,
you know, we weren't having to be on the street much.
Gotcha.
Or probably writing at 40.
Right. Brent, you're starting to fade just a little bit.
Oh, sorry. We were touring and or writing music and recording, you know?
Yeah.
So there was never any point for me anyways, I mean, that it felt like that, you know? I mean, it did feel like after us, a ton of bands got signed, but only a handful of bands actually got to tour and really make it, you know?
And when the Seattle stuff and the grunge stuff first started hitting, how did you feel about that personally? Was it a threat? Did you like it?
I liked the music, you know, Nirvana. I was a big fan of Nirvana,
right,
you know, and we all liked it a lot, you know, and we just thought it was totally different, which it was, but the record companies, unfortunately, you know, thought, you know, so it was strictly a business decision by the record companies and right. MTV.
Right on.
So, you know, we liked it, you know.
Right. Brent, I wanted to ask you about the first time I saw you guys live, which was at the Boston Garden Arena, opening for Alice Cooper, November 17th, 1987. What do you remember about the Alice Cooper tour? I think Ace Frehley was supposed to be on it, but he dropped off. And I don't know. That was such a great introduction to you for me that night. I didn't know much about you going into the show, and I came out converted and immediately went and bought the first album and was hooked. The Alice Cooper tour, 1987. Memories of that?
Well, Alice Cooper is a really great guy, really cool guy. I mean, to this day, probably one of the nicest guys you could meet in rock and roll. So we were really lucky to be able to tour with him, you know, such a, you know, nice guy and very personable. And Ace was on part of the tour, I think. He wasn't on the part of it that you saw, but he was on part of the tour.
Yeah, he was billed. I remember it was supposed to be Faster Pussycat, Ace, and Alice. And then when we got to the show, it was just you guys and Alice, which we were okay with because, you know, you killed it, and so did Alice. It was a great night.
Yeah, and Alice, like I said, he was a great guy to tour with, really super nice.
Cool.
And he had a great band and great people touring with him, too. He had, like, members touring with him. And
was that with Kip Winger and Kane Roberts at that time?
I don't think Kip was with him. Kip was with him, like, a year before, but when we toured, I think Kip was already kind of finished.
Definitely. All right, cool. And so the demise, the original demise of Faster Pussycat happens when? 1993-ish?
94? 94, okay. 93, 94, yeah. We broke up, I guess. We didn't officially even break on it, but we just kind of, we were dropped by Elektra, and then we just kind of stopped touring, and everybody kind of went and did their own thing.
In that late 90s period, what were you up to musically?
I went back and lived in, you know, around Hollywood, and I played with a bunch of just like local bands for fun. I never stopped playing. I went out and just started working in the movie industry. I was like a camera assistant on commercials and music videos and movies. So I just kept working and I kept playing, but playing was more for fun, not the pressure of being signed and having to make hits and stuff. I would just play with all sorts of different bands, and it was a good time for me because actually I just played for fun, you know, without the pressure of being signed.
So were you doing like TV production work?
Yeah, well, not so much TV, but commercials.
Right, okay.
And movies,
nice.
And music videos.
Right.
Not so much TV. TV is a whole different thing, you know, but TV kind of one studio and on the set. So we would go on, I would do it on different locations and different stuff like that. But it was pretty cool, and I did that for a while. And then I got back into music probably around 2000. 1999, I started playing, met Phil Lewis from LA Guns and got a band with him.
Right.
And started getting back into music. And
did you guys did an album together, you and Phil?
Yeah, we did. We did a couple of records, actually. There's a couple of little things out there we did. One was called More Purple Than Black. And then we did like a Phil Lewis, like kind of solo album. It was just called Phil Lewis, but I played on that and recorded that. And I think at least one of them was released in the States, I think. But we released one in Japan too, in Port Japan. And then from then I got into LA Guns.
And how long were you with LA Guns?
I think there was a time where I was in for a while, then I was out, then I was back in for a while, but probably all together about 2 years on and off.
Right. Okay. And then you were, then I guess, is it around 2001, Faster Pussycat reforms? Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, reformed, exactly.
And was it all the original guys at that point?
It was three originals, me, Greg, and Tammy.
Right.
And then some guys he's playing with now. We did that for about a year or two. And then I just I came to Vegas and was started playing Vegas and do pretty well just on my own here in Vegas. Better than, you know, I could do out touring with them, you know, touring. I play in town more.
Right. So it was something you chose not to do. You left the newly reformed Faster Pussycat?
Yeah, after a while, it's just I felt like we had hit our peak, and then it wasn't as good as it, you know, once something I kind of hit the peak and it's not as good, I just felt like it was time to just get something new.
And you were aware that they were going to continue on without you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. They, you know, I was out of the band for a while, and they were doing something, so...
And then,
and a lot of those old bands too, they tour with only one member or something.
Yeah.
A lot of those bands, you know.
Which is pretty much, I mean, that's what Tammy's doing now, right? He's out
there. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And does it, are you okay with him being out there representing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought we had a, you know, some of our bickering a little bit when it first happened, but that's pretty normal. You know, I think all those bands that do that have a little bit of bickering. Even right now, there's like two versions of LA Guns out there right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm okay. Like I said, I'm okay. I hope people get, yeah, in the 90s, and then the late 80s, 90s.
I'm losing you again, Brent. I'm losing you.
Oh, I was saying I hope people got to see us in our prime, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And have you spoken with Tammy since he's been sober?
Yeah, I actually probably about a month.
And was it interesting to talk to him in a sober state or pretty much the same?
Well, you know, when he was, I guess, I never really ever saw him too screwed up, you know?
Right.
I mean, even though he's sober now, even when, I guess, when he wasn't, I never saw him super bad, you know what I mean? Like, I never saw him too screwed up. Most of the times when I talked to him, he was, you know, straight, you know?
Right on. Right on. And then there was that, the Cat House reunion, right? You mentioned the Cat House earlier. You got up on stage with them at that. What was that, 2015?
Yeah, we did that. That was awesome. And me and Grit, you know, some original members, we got to do that. So I think that was like four original members. That, you know, me, Greg, Eric, and Tammy got together on there. That was real cool.
Do you think there could ever be a reunion of like the kind of classic lineup of Faster Pussycat?
Gosh, I doubt it. I think if it was going to happen, it would have already.
Right.
I don't think there's enough, you know, there's interest, but I don't think there's enough interest to warrant that, you know?
Okay. I would definitely be interested in that, but.
Oh, I mean, like I said, there'd definitely be some interest,
yeah.
But it would be, you know, in order to get everybody to do it, I think there'd have to be a lot more interest, you know what
right.
I mean? Where. If it was Guns N' Roses, you know, Guns N' Roses, they get probably like $1 million when they play because there's that much interest, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, you know, Faster was a popular band, but not as big as, you know, GNR when it comes to that kind of, you know, interest, you know?
Right. Right. I remember talking once to Mike Patton of Faith No More before Faith No More
uh-huh.
got back together, and I said, would there ever be a Faith No More reunion? And he said, not unless there's a lot more money on the table. So I thought
yeah.
that was always an interesting statement.
And I didn't want to say money exactly, but
right.
yeah, I mean, that's part of it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, but I just say interest, you know?
Right.
Which is kind of boils down to the same thing. There would be some more money on the table.
Right on. And then you were doing Sin City Sinners for a while. That you're not involved with that anymore, or you are?
No. Everybody that we did that band with now is called Original Sin.
Okay.
On
my own performance with my finger.
I see.
Right now, we might start doing more, but for right now, our next show we have booked with Original Sin.
Right on. Cool, man. Well, listen, Brent, it's been great talking with you. I love hearing all the old stories, and man, what a great career you've had. And please keep
Thank
it up.
So
when I come to Vegas the next time, I definitely want to come see the Saints of Las Vegas.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be an honor to see you play again and shake your hand.
I'll send you, text me your email address. I'll send you a version of how the same that I did, and maybe you can, share it or something too.
Oh, wow. I'd love to. Could I feature a little bit of it on the podcast?
Sure. Awesome. Yeah. That'd be great. Awesome.
All right. Let's do it. I'll definitely do that.
Text me your email and we're just sending it, and I'll get you a copy of it.
Perfect. Thank you, Brent. I appreciate it.
Soon. 5 years old and talking to myself. Where were you? Where'd you go? Daddy, can't you tell? I'm not trying to fake it, and I ain't the one to blame. No, there's no one home in my house of pain. Still talking to myself. Where were you? Where'd you go? Daddy, can't you tell? I'm not trying to fake it, and I ain't the one to blame. No, there's no one home in my house of pain. And I didn't write.
That song right there, House of Pain 2019, John, by Brent Muscat featuring Ryan White Maloney. Ryan White Maloney, who I guess is famous. He was on The Voice or something. I didn't watch that show.
Very
yeah.
Cool.
And I got to tell you, when Brent told me he was going to send me over this new version of House of Pain, which I guess very few people have heard, so I feel like that's kind of a Talking Metal exclusive right there. I was like, man, that song is so good. How can you re-record it? You know, that's risky. But they pulled it off, man. They do a great job. Brent Muscat and Ryan White Maloney do an excellent job with the new version of House of Pain. Very good. Good stuff, guys.
Great, great tune. Thank you for allowing Talking Metal to debut that tune.
Absolutely. And Brent, please stay in touch with us. Really,
I love your
body of work and everything that you've done. Really, you've been an inspiration.
I'm a super fan of Brent, and I swear to God, there's not many people that I'm a super fan of. Brent is one of the dudes that I am a super fan of.
Yeah, what a lineup today. We got Corey Glover and Brent Muscat. Some big names for you guys. And this next guy, not quite as big a name, but still doing some great music. So let's get into a brief interview with Freddie from Weapons of
Anew. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we have Freddie Ordine from Weapons of Anew on the line with us, who is currently out in tour. Hey, Freddie, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for talking with us. Let's talk about the tour. You guys are, what, in the middle of it right now or approaching the end of it? How's it been going?
It's been great, man. We're about a month into it. I think we got about 3 weeks left. It's been really good, dude. You know, it's kind of cool for us. We're the heavy band on the tour, so we kind of stick out a little bit more. Surprisingly, the fans really kind of accepting of it. They seem to be connecting with it. We were a little nervous when we took the tour on. You know, it's not really our kind of demographic. And it's been going great.
Cool. And how did this all come about? This is a tour that features Scott Stapp as the headliner. How did you hook up with Scott and get on this tour?
Came in through management. We had just gotten off the Metal Illusions run we had done out on the West Coast. We were coming home to start working on the new record and got a call and they said, hey, you guys want to go out with Scott? You can't say no to that. So we were like, yeah, we're going. And we had a 5 days notice. We packed up and away we went.
Awesome. And you mentioned the new record. How can we expect this record to differ from 2007's The Collusion of Love?
It's definitely us growing up a little bit more. You know, we've done a lot of touring. So, you know, the band's kind of come a long way. So, you know, with Chris and me, you know, they've never toured before. We've done this, you know, for almost forever, I'd say. And, you know, when we got these guys in, they're just starting to kind of grow, and the band really kind of grew. So it's definitely like a little bit more mature. You know, still heavy. It's got some really cool hooks on it, a lot of melody still.
Cool. And are you working with a certain producer and label on this album, the new album?
Mike Ferretti. He did Seven Dust and stuff like that. So we brought him in. We've been friends with him for a long time. He actually helped us mix the last record. So we figured, you know, everything worked good. We enjoyed working with him, so we brought Mike in. And then our management's actually shopping us a new deal as we speak. So nothing yet.
But okay.
Looking good.
Cool. So no exact release date set for this, I would assume, right?
They're saying first quarter of this next year coming up, 2020. So January, February.
Cool. And you're a guitar player. What kind of gear do you use? What guitars and what amps, effects?
I'm with ESP. I've been with those guys for probably 5-6 years for guitars. And they build me some awesome stuff out of the USA Custom Shop here. So it's phenomenal stuff. So mainly that, you know, that's all my guitars is that. Amps are, I've been with Bogner almost 22 years.
So nice.
Then it's a Bogner Rubershaw is like pretty much a mainstay for me. And I just got hooked up with Mesa Boogie too. So I've been using the new John Petrucci one. So I'm mixing those two heads together live.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I love Bogner. I have a
Wallace out there.
Yeah, I can imagine. I have a Bogner Shiva, which I just love to death. Yeah, great,
awesome.
Great amps. And let's talk a little bit about the band for the listeners who might not know much about you guys. Can you tell us just a little bit about your history, where you guys are from?
Well, we're from New York and New Jersey area. We started, I think it was 2015. We all got together. So Ray was in another band called Spread Eagle. He had taken a couple of years off, just like me. I was in a band called Havocate, which was me and a couple of the guys from Testament. We did a few records. I stopped playing in probably, I think it was 06. And Ray was roughly around the same time. And we got together. We both said, if we're going to do this, let's, you know, make it not sound like anything we've done before. And, you know, we just kind of put it together from there.
Cool. And the tour is coming through New Jersey, right? And like next week?
Yeah. Yeah, we're at Centerville, I think, Saturday, we're playing Centerville.
Do you expect a lot of friends and family to come down to that show?
Yeah, we understand. We've probably got about 150 people in guest list. We have to actually buy some tickets. So, wow. Just to get ready, we only get 10 people a night. We didn't want to ask for it. So, we went and bought a couple tickets from the promoter from the club so we could get all our people and we don't want our family paying for us or friends and stuff like that. These are people that have been supporting us forever. So, for sure, it's our way of saying thank you.
Right on. And as far as your musical influences go, let's start with guitar playing. Who are some of your favorite guitar players? Who did you listen to growing up?
Growing up, I mean, you know, I started out with the basic, you know, Kiss, Motley Crue stuff. And then I got into, you know, Metallica and Slayer. And then I found guys like Yngwie Malmsteen, Steve Vai, and, you know, Aldo Meola, all kind of guys like that. So I got really into the shred guys.
Cool. And did you, as far as developing your skill, were you like, taking lessons, how did you go about learning?
I was pretty much self-taught. My father played a little bit, so, you know, he kind of got me going, you know, like your basic G chord and D chord and stuff like that. And I just kind of took to it, and I just loved it. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't have YouTube, so we had to sit, you know, play records and tapes and just sit there and learn, like, all the nuances from these guys playing. So it was cool. I just fell in love.
Cool. And the Jersey scene, like, when did you kind of get into the Jersey rock scene?
I mean, I was in a band called Axiom back in 91 or 92.
Okay.
And we had gotten signed to a small label, and, you know, we worked the local scene. But then back then there was, you know, Studio One was here, Cook Club was here, Birchill was still here.
Birchill, right.
But there was a ton of places to still play. And, you know, it's, unfortunately, it's not like that anymore. But yeah, I kind of grew up in it.
As far as your career highlights go, you've been doing this a while. What are some of the big moments of your, you know, highlights of your career? It can be, you know, with Weapons of Anew or with other bands. What are your career highlights?
Yeah, I mean, with my old band, I mean, we did a lot of touring. So, I mean, I got to tour with Motorhead all over the place. So that was really cool. Got to know Lemmy on a personal level.
Cool. Now, which band was that opening for Motorhead? That was
Havocate.
Okay. Awesome.
So I think that was back in 2002, 2003, so we got to go over with those guys. So it was us, Anthrax, and Motorhead on one tour. So for me, that was like a good thing come true. And then just getting to know Lemmy on that kind of level. And then, I mean, honestly, with Weapons, we've been nothing but lucky. We had never played a live show before, but, you know, between me and Ray, all our contacts in the industry, we got offered the Alter Bridge tour while we were working on the first record. So we went out in the middle of doing that record. Our first show was in Royal Oaks, Michigan in front of like 2,800 people. So that was a pretty good one. And, you know, getting to go out with Tesla was cool. I mean, I love touring. I mean, you know, just getting to go out with these older bands that have been doing it forever and have success at it. It's just, you know, it's been a fun thing for us.
Now, Ray is doing the Spread Eagle thing, too. Can you kind of explain how he's balancing both Spread Eagle and what he's doing with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, with Weapons, we're so busy just with the touring and the records and everything. I mean, Weapons is his full-time, you know, thing. The Spread Eagle thing, like I said, you know, they got a cool offer on it. He's still really tight with Rob, the bass player. So Rob asked if, you know, they wanted to do the record, and Ray was absolutely about it. So he said, okay, you know, let's go out and kind of close the chapter on this book. I guess he felt, you know, there was a little bit of unfinished business that they wanted to finish. And
right on.
It's good, man. I heard it for the first time while we were out on tour. It was actually pretty good.
Cool. And besides you and Ray, can you run down who else is in the band?
Sure. Reno, bass player. He's been with us since the beginning, and then Chris Manfrey, drummer.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Freddie, we really appreciate your time here on Talking Metal. Thanks for taking some time out of your touring schedule to speak with us. And I'd love to be down at the Jersey show, but we're actually going up to Heavy Montreal this weekend, so we won't be able to make that. But I hope to see you guys sometime soon in the area.
Next time we're around, we'll let you know and come out. Beautiful design.
mercy for me now. As a kill shot comes.
Tonight.
Yeah.
All right, John. So,
all right.
What else is happening with you? Any other news? Any like 2 minute update you can give the fans?
Yeah. So, we got a upcoming group of shows with Ace Frehley coming up, starting with a show in Annapolis, Maryland at Ram's Head on Stage. And then we're going to head up to do a free show in New York area. In a place called East Hanover, New Jersey, a car dealership. A lot of people think that's weird, but guess what?
It's on Route 10. I know exactly. It's really close to where
exactly
I live. Yeah,
you
and unfortunately, I can't come because I'm going to see Heart. I have Heart tickets that night.
Oh, well, yeah. Understandable. You have actual tickets.
But you know I come to the shows when I can. I came up to wherever the hell that was. Tarrytown, or where was that? Somewhere up by
White
the... White Plains. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a far gig. You came.
That was a fun night, man.
That was a great gig. With Rat and Ace Frehley. How freaking cool is the fact that Talking Metal alumni are doing shows with Rat and Ace Frehley? How weird is that?
Awesome. It's awesome.
And guess
congratulations,
what we got to get
man.
Happening? We got to get Mark Striegel on stage doing shows with Rat and Ace Frehley and like getting Talking Metal. And
well, you want to hear something?
I'm gonna organize that.
I haven't told anybody
what?
This. I you want to hear something?
Yes.
I haven't told anybody this, but I'm going because... Since I've had kids, I've done a little jamming, a few gigs, you know, screaming metal and stuff, but not a lot. And right. I am going on an audition for a band on Monday night. Yeah.
You should fucking get it no matter what. And sorry for swearing.
Yeah. I hope so. So we'll see. I guess. I don't know. I'm auditioning them too because I want to hear what they sound like.
Right.
But yeah, that's a little bit of news for you guys.
Big news, Mark. Big news. I want to see you getting back out there rocking. And guess what? Regardless of that, and I hope that works out, I want to keep rocking with you. And let's get it all together and all of us keep rocking. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Can we do
absolutely.
It? We try it?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I want to jam. I'm itching to play. Itching to play. So yeah. Listen, we're going to wrap it there. I know we had some pretty extensive interviews on this show, but it's always great having you back, John. We miss you when you're not here.
Thank you. I know. I want to be on every episode. You call me and I'm there, brother.
All right, man.
I am ready to rock.
Cool. All right, guys. And to take us out, let's play a little Like It, John's band. What can we play, John?
Let's play the song My Way, which
My
is
way.
Really Jamie's Way.
Yeah, here we go. My Way by Like It here on Talking Metal. That's going to do it for today's episode of Talking Metal. A little Like It right there. We'll have their site linked through today's show notes on talkingrock.net and talkingmetal.com. Remember, guys, it's never okay to drive stoned. You put yourself and others in danger, and a DUI covers more than just alcohol.
Drugs that make you feel different will make you drive different. And you could get a DUI, which is not cool. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. Just don't do it, guys. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. That's really important, guys. I mean, weed has become so popular. I know everyone's doing it now, but it's just don't drive when you're doing that. It's just stupidity, really. We love our listeners. We want you around. So just be safe and smart with getting high and driving. All right. Thanks, guys.